If what we sang is not true, we're wasting our time. It's in the confidence that our Redeemer arose from the grave, ascended back to heaven, and He lives today, that we're gathered here to remember His death for our sins, and together with other believers in worship to His honor. What a privilege it is to know that our Redeemer lives and that He's coming again to receive His own to Himself. It's a responsibility and a privileged responsibility we have to address ourselves to the understanding of His will for us, since He is our King, our Savior King. And that's why we're going to engage in these few minutes of Bible study together. And I hope that they'll be beneficial to you in serving that King. In the 20th chapter of the book of Exodus, and in the 12th verse, we learn that one of the Ten Commandments was to honor your father and mother. Those Ten Commandments were given to the nation of Israel at Mount Sinai. I'm not part of the nation of Israel, nor am I under that covenant. And yet in the book of Ephesians, a letter written to a church in Ephesus composed of Christians, that particular command is applied to them, and they are reminded of the responsibility to honor their father and mother. Not because it was written in Exodus chapter 20 and commanded of the nation of Israel. And not simply because you find it in a New Testament letter. The fact is that commandment made known to Israel and affirmed to the early Christians is a commandment that all men that have ever lived that had a father and mother, it's a responsibility they had. That responsibility does not grow out of being an Israelite. That responsibility does not grow out of being a Christian. Israelites had the responsibility, and Christians have the responsibility. But it's a responsibility of every child to honor your mother and father, because duties, honor is based on relationships. That is, having a mother and father. This is made clear in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8, where Paul is telling the early church, telling Timothy, who preached in the early church at Ephesus, that they were to provide for their widowed mothers or grandmothers who were in need. And he made this statement in 1 Timothy 5:8, if anyone does not provide for his own, he is worse than an infidel. How in the world can you be worse than an infidel? A person who denies the deity of Christ and His purpose in coming is going to be lost in his sins. He's going to spend an eternity in hell. How can you be worse than that? Here's how. Even an infidel who may not believe in Jesus understands he has a duty to his parents based on the relationship he sustains to them. And if I claim to be a Christian and I do not take care of my family, my father, my mother, my grandmother, my grandfather in need, I'm worse than an infidel. I do not show the basic understanding and respect that grows out of the relationship God has ordained. And so that underscores the fact that understanding duties based on relationship is a fundamental concept and a principle that will help us in the interpretation and the application of scriptures. And our particular study today has to do with the obligation, our duties to father and mother. When we think about father and mother and honoring father and mother, we think in terms of biological relationship. The father or the mother who are responsible for our physical birth. But the fact is, in the scriptures, the idea of father is often used in a context in which it's not biological, but rather talking about the provision and care and protection that a father provides. For example, in Genesis chapter 45 and verse 8, here is a text about Joseph. In chapter 45 and verse 8, here's what he said. It was not you who sent me, talking to his brothers. It was not you who sent me, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh. There was no biological relationship between Joseph and Pharaoh. No father-son relationship. But rather, because of God revealing to him in a dream what would happen, and Pharaoh putting him in charge of Egypt, he, like a good father, prepared for the coming famine. He made me a father, that is, to provide for the well-being of Egypt, and now even his own father and brothers who came to Egypt for sustenance. In Job chapter 29, you may be aware of the fact that Job likely predates the law. And in Job chapter 29 and in verse 16, he said, I was a father to the needy, and I investigated the case which I did not know. A father to the needy. He saw someone in need. He provided for them. That's what a father does. And so understanding what a dutiful father does, that term is applied to someone who's not a biological father, but carries out the duties of a father to his neighbor. In Psalm chapter 68, Psalm chapter 68, again we have this term used, verse 5, a father of the fatherless. And a judge for the widows. The New King James says, a defender of the widows. The English Standard Version says, a protector of the widows. So another duty that a father will carry out is not only the provision, but the protection of those in his care. And you see the term father used in that connotation in this particular verse. In Proverbs, in chapter 1, and in verse 8, hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Throughout the Proverbs, the young man being addressed, the writer calls him a son. Sometimes it's in reference to his biological parents, but sometimes it's relative to the role that he's fulfilling as a teacher. A father provides counsel and guidance, and that's the duties of a father. In Psalm 103, and in verse 13, we see another aspect, the connotation of the term father. Just as a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear him. So he was a father to Israel, not biological father, but one who showed compassion for their needs, their sorrows, their difficulties. Now, when you look at Malachi chapter 1 and verse 6, it confirms the point that we're making, that this term father, with its connotations, is clearly used when there's no biological connection. In Malachi 1:6, he said, a son honors his father and a servant his master. Then if I'm a father, where is my honor? Obviously, God was not the biological father of Judah or Israel. But you see that they owed him honor as a father. He was their provider. He was their protector. He was their judge and defender. He was compassionate to them. And they owed him honor. Now, the reason for looking at these verses is this. We're looking at a duty. Honor your father and mother. What if there's a man or a woman that is not your biological father or mother, but they are the ones who provided for you? They are the ones who counseled you. They are the ones who protected you. They are the ones who cried with you when your heart was broken and showed compassion to you. Do you owe them honor? It may be a stepfather or a stepmother. But the fact is, they have been dutifully providing what the role of father and mothers is intended to provide. And if I understand God's will on this matter, those persons ought to be honored as a father and a mother ought to be honored. Now, and I hope that you see the practical application of this principle that we've been talking about. Not only in interpretation, but in practical application. What do I do in this particular case? If duties are based on relationship, hopefully, that helps us with that. But now let's look at this business of honoring. What does that honoring entail? The word honor is the idea of respect your father and mother. But what does that entail? We have some specific examples here in these verses that we're looking at. Look at Exodus chapter 21. And verse 15 and verse 17. He who strikes his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. Verse 17. He who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. So a person may give lip service to, I respect my mother and daddy. I love my father and mother. But be violent against them physically or verbally. If I understand these two verses, that is a failure to respect and honor your mother and father. When and whose job is it to teach children that? The father and mother. So when those children are young, should a father and mother allow their children to strike them when they're displeased or unhappy, or to say mean and hateful things about them? Is it not incumbent upon the father, whose job is to counsel and to give instruction and discipline when needed, to teach the child what's involved in respect or honor your mother and father? Look at Leviticus chapter 19. We're not looking at these verses because we're under the Old Testament law. We're looking at them because they serve to help us understand this basic responsibility of honoring our parents. In Leviticus chapter 19 and in verse 32, you shall rise up before the gray-headed and honor the aged. So there's a demeanor that befits honoring mother and father. And children ought to be taught that when young. There's nothing wrong with a child being taught. Mother and father have privileges you don't have. Maybe it's a chair to sit in. Maybe it's something about supper and what they eat or whatever it may be. The rising up was simply a way to express there's a difference. You're the father, I'm the child. And I respect you for the different role that we have. You'll note at the end of that verse, the confirming force of it. He says, and you shall revere your God, I am the Lord. It's God who expects that. Not simply family tradition. In Proverbs, in chapter 30 and verse 17, you see another specific reflection of what honoring your father and your mother entails. In chapter 30 and verse 17, the eye that mocks a father and scorns a mother, the ravens of the valley will pick it out, the young eagles will eat it. Children may mock their parents and scorn them in the words they say, in the faces they make, and the way they react. But do you honor your mother and father? Oh, yes. Not if you practice this. Nor should parents allow it. It's their job to train them to honor mother and father. Over in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 1 and 2, sometimes fathers and mothers are wrong. And a wise father and mother, when shown they're wrong, or when they become aware of that they're wrong, will admit it. But there may be a time and place when a child or someone younger may need to point out their error to them and their mistake in thinking and action. And it's called rebuking. And here's a young preacher, Timothy, probably in his 30s, who may have occasion to correct men in their 50s or 60s or 70s. But there's a way in which it's to be done. The New American Standard translates, do not sharply rebuke an older man. Well, how do you rebuke him, Paul? But rather appeal to him as a father. And then, verse 2, the older women as mothers. So fathers and mothers may need to be corrected. It's not expected that a child will have to agree with everything a mother and father does or concludes, whatever age that child may be. Usually that'll be when the child gets old enough to make some rational decisions. But if there's going to be any correction, it's to be done with respect for their age. And if your mother or father are wrong and you correct them without respecting that, you are in wrong. Because you're to honor your mother and father even in times of rebuke. Now, fathers and mothers, we said, do things wrong sometimes, and they do. They do the best they can, for example, in disciplining their children. But sometimes they make mistakes because our knowledge and our wisdom is limited. In Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 9, He says, we have had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time, and it's this little phrase I want you to note. As seemed best to them. They did the best they could, but that allows for the fact that their judgment may have been impaired. But if that is the case, that does not open the door to disrespect them. Yes, mothers and fathers make mistakes. Fathers and mothers sometimes sin and bring shame upon themselves. And you have a case of that in Genesis chapter 9, verse 20 through 27, where Noah, a righteous man, the father of these three boys, got drunk and brought shame upon himself. But when one of the boys failed to respect his father and his conduct, judgment was brought upon him. The father was wrong, but it does not nullify the responsibility to honor, to respect your father. And then we just read 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 1 and 2. So honor your father and mother involves respect in attitude, speech, and conduct. But there's something else entailed in respecting your mother and father. And when you look at Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 1 and 2, that is very clear. He said, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. He quotes that very statement we've been working on. The word honor then implies the responsibility to obey your father and your mother. Why? Because they're going to whip you? That might be an added incentive. Why? Well, I obey mom because she's my favorite. Is that why? Why? Oh, so I'll be rewarded? Is that right? Why do you obey your mother and father? That's what our family tradition is. We've always done it. None of those are the reason. He said it's right. Because it's right. It's a duty you have based on your relationship to your mother and father in honoring them. A duty that grows out of relationship. Now, we understand that particularly when our children are young. But children grow up. And sometimes they grow up and leave the home. And when they do so, they form other relationships. Now the question is, and that's where I hope we'll see how this principle can help us with some knotty questions. Okay, when I was 8, I should obey my mother and father. But now I'm 28. They're still my mother and father. What are my duties in obeying mother and father? The Bible teaches us, as well as common sense, that as we get older, relationships change. And that's true of the father-mother relationship. While the biological connection or the moral connection is still there. There's a change as you get older. Look at Esther chapter 2. Esther chapter 2. Here's this very interesting story about this young woman, Esther, who came to be in a position that could possibly affect the destiny of the Hebrew nation. Mordecai was aware of the danger. And in Esther chapter 2 and verse 20, you see something about the relationship between Esther and Mordecai, who had raised her. It says, Esther did what Mordecai told her, as she had done, note this now, as she had done when under his care. She's not under his care anymore. But in this particular case, it says that she did as she had done when under his care. However, when you get to chapter 4 and verse 8, note, it says that she was ordered to go into the king to implore his favor and to plead with him for the people by Mordecai. So here's Esther. I don't know how old she is. She's marriageable age. Was she 25? I don't know. Was she 30? I don't know. Now, there was a time and times when she still obeyed Mordecai. But here, Mordecai ordered her to do something in chapter 4, verse 8. Now look at verse 14. If you remain silent at this time, she has a choice. She can do what Mordecai says, put her life on the line, risk dying for her nation, or she can refuse. She's not under Mordecai's care anymore. She's got to make a choice. And so if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise from the Jews from another place, etc. But he said, maybe you're in this particular situation by God's providence. That's a paraphrase of the end of the verse. And who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this. So it reaches a point in a person's age when they, somewhere along the line, instead of just strict obedience, you may still do what mother and dad said. It may be great counsel, but you reach a point where you have more responsibility and freedom of choice about their orders. That's what you find in this particular story. Look in Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 24. This will demonstrate that with age, relationships change and the duties growing out of those relationships change. So when Esther was in his care, you do what Mordecai says. Now she's got a choice. Here's the responsibility of a father. He who withholds his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him diligently. Craig Ottersback is not here today, but let's suppose he was. And Wally sees him doing something he shouldn't do. So he takes his belt off and starts spanking Craig. He said, wait a minute. I'm a father. He's my son. Yeah, but things have changed. This may be true of a 13-year-old, but not necessarily a 30-year-old. And we understand that. So as the relationship changes, the duties are impacted as well. So look at chapter 23, verse 13 and 14. Do not hold discipline from the child, although you strike him with the rod, he will not die. You shall strike him with the rod and rescue his soul from Sheol. So the boy is 50 and the daddy's 80. Get that rod out, boy. Whip that man. You can see that even the scriptures, these instructions, are founded on this axiomatic understanding that duties are based on relationships, and as the relationships change, the duties change. In Deuteronomy 21, it's a great example to illustrate this principle. Deuteronomy 21. If any man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey his father or his mother, and when they chastise him, he will not even listen to them, then his father and mother shall seize him and bring him out to the elders of his city at the gateway of his hometown. They shall say to the elders of the city, "This son of ours is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey us. He's a glutton and a drunkard." Then all the men of his city shall stone him to death. So let's say he's 18 years old, 16 years old. Mother and dad have pled with him, tried to teach him, but the boy is into drunkenness and all kind of evil. Nothing they can do to impact this boy. Now, whether any Jewish father and mother ever did what here is commanded, I don't know. But this was God's plan. Why? Because he loved every other boy and girl in Israel and did not want them to follow that course. And so the father was to take that boy to the elders of the city, knowing it would mean his death. What if instead of being 18, he's 38 or 48? Now what? So, oh no, it doesn't mean that. But it doesn't state it in the text. But you understand that the duty is based on the relationship, and as the relationship changes, the duty changes. I hope that we can see that very clearly. Besides the fact of age affecting this, as this boy or girl gets older, they enter new relationships. And with the new relationships become some duties they have growing out of those relationships. For example, over in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 22, we find that wives are to submit themselves to their husbands. But what if dad says one thing and husband says another thing? They've entered a new relationship that supersedes the older relationship. And women ought to recognize, I'm not mama's girl anymore. You were given in marriage. You belong to that man. And his wishes and his will supersede over the parents now. And so where we have obey your father and mother, now this woman has entered into a new relationship. And that impacts the duties that she once had to her mother and her father. In Ephesians 6:4, fathers, train your children. So, now, this young boy is to be trained by this father, but at one time this father was a son. And he obeyed his father, but now he's now father himself. In training his child, does he obey what his father says to do, or is he responsible to have the wisdom and judgment to figure out what to do and do it whether his father agrees or disagrees? He's entered a new relationship that impacts the relationship he still has, but on a different level with the one that he used to obey simply as a son. And so in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 14, 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 14, you see again this idea I want younger widows to get married, bear children, keep house. So the young woman gets married and bears children and keeps house. This verse says, American Standard, I think, does a better job, rule the household. So she's mama now. She's got to make decisions as mama. Does she say, let me call up mama and see what she tells me to do and I will do that? She may call up mama for counsel, but it's different than when she was 8 and now she's 28 and has her own family. And so with the added relationship, it impacts that. I trust you can see that in Ephesians chapter 6 and in verse 5. He said, slaves, be obedient to those who are your masters. So this boy, when he was 5, obeys his father. Now he's 25. He's got a boss, an employer. He's entered a new relationship. He gets a call on his phone. His daddy says, come home. I want you to help me with the yard. His boss says, you don't get off till 5 o'clock. What does he do? Is he disobeying his father and mother? This commandment we've been reading? No, he's entered a new relationship. And that impacts the duties that are growing out of that those new relationships. Now, the third thing that's involved in honoring father and mother is providing for them. Mark chapter 7, I'll not read it. You can write it down, read it if you wish. Jesus reproved the Pharisees for failing to take care of their mothers and fathers and supposedly taking those funds that they could help mother and father and contributing to the treasury. I don't know if they did or not. But the point is they had a responsibility, and he quoted this very commandment. And in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8, which we read earlier, if any does not provide for his own, he's worse than an infidel. So honor father and mother involves at least three things. Respect in how I treat them, in my attitude, my speech, and my conduct. Obeying them, respecting their authority. And as times change and they're in need, providing for them. That's involved in honoring your mother and father. Now comes the naughty part. And I know that good people have wrestled with what we're going to talk about for just a minute or two. Because good people, people who respect the Bible, people who want to serve God, have been faced with this dilemma. I'll present a particular situation. Here's a woman. Let's say she's 40. Let's say her mother is 60 or 65. Let's say that her mother drinks, gets drunk. And when she does, her language is terrible and she's abusive. And so the daughter, while she looks out for her mother and her needs, is not interested in going spending several hours hanging out with her. Going and doing social things with her. And so the mother hits her on the head with, don't you know you're supposed to honor your mother and father? The mother's not even interested in serving God, but she knows what weapon to pull out of her arsenal to make her daughter feel bad. Folks, honor your father and mother does not mean you have to hang around with them when they're up in years. Maybe you live in a different town. Maybe they live a different lifestyle. And don't let them make you feel bad about that. That's not a duty, unless I've missed it somewhere. If you got a Bible, you can show it to me, fine. Should they visit them if they're in need? They should. Should they provide for them if they need help? They should. But the duty to just spend time socially is not a duty that they have throughout time, throughout their age, to their mother and their father. What about indulging their every whim? The mother calls the daughter and says, hey, I'm out of beer. Buy me some beer. I can't do that, Mom. Don't you love your mother? Aren't you supposed to honor your mother and obey your mother? That does not mean that child has to obey their mother or father's every whim. Care for them if they're in need? Yes. Here's this mother who lives this ungodly life. The daughter tries to talk to her about it. Maybe becomes very plain and blunt about it. Oh, you know what the mother does. What are you doing talking to me like that? Don't you know you're supposed to honor your mother and your father? That is, always treat me with respect and honor me and don't show me my faults. I'm going to tell you what, folks, that's not a duty growing out of that relationship. If anything, it's the other way around, as we read in 1 Timothy 5, to rebuke, but respecting age, an older person. Now, I'm presenting this scenario. It's a real scenario. I don't know the ages of the two ladies involved, but this was actually brought to our attention, my wife and I. And this good woman was concerned about, am I obeying God in these matters? If I understand this principle we've talked about now for 5 weeks, this is the sixth lesson, it can help us with this concept to understand that duties grow out of relationship, but relationships change. And therefore, the duties growing out of those relationships change. Does not mean you have to allow this person to abuse you or your children or to steal from you without exposing their error. It does not. Well, what about changing them? No, you try to talk to them and they won't listen about their life. Do I have the obligation, because they're my mother and my father, to continue to try to convert them to morality and even to Christ? Jesus told his apostles, do not cast your pearls before swine. And even told them, when you go into a city and they reject you, dust your feet off and leave. No, because they're your mother and father does not mean you should feel guilty for having done all that you could, and now your mother and father will not listen and treat everything you do with disrespect, that you just say, that's all I can do. Don't let them put a guilt trip on you for that. So the mother says, don't you love me? Don't you supposed to love? Here's the answer. Yes. Caring love, but not emotional love. There's a difference. And there's nothing wrong with telling a mother like that, you've killed that. You've killed the desire for me to be with you by the way you act and speak and treat me. But they're your mother and father. Aren't you to forgive them? Forgive them unconditionally? Isn't that the love of Christ? No, it is not. I know the world teaches that. You just forgive people unconditionally. That's not what the Bible teaches. Yes, if your mother's penitent or your father for what they've done to you, for their failures, you need to repent and forgive them. If they repent, you need to be merciful and forgive them. If you want God to forgive you, yes. Regardless how bad they've been. But that does not mean, because they're your mother and father, you overlook all of their faults and just say it's all okay. That simply is not what the Bible teaches, if I understand these teachings about duties and relationships. Over in 2 Chronicles in chapter 34. 2 Chronicles chapter 34. What this passage shows is that every person has a responsibility and right to choose whether to obey mother and father under certain circumstances, even when young. Here's the case of a young man, Josiah. And the text says that when he was 8 years old, he became king. Verse 2 says he did right in the sight of the Lord and walked in the ways of his father, David. That's not father, biological, mom and dad and son thing. It was ancient ancestor. And he walked in the ways of his father, David, and did not turn aside to the right or to the left. For in the 8th year of his reign, while he was still a youth, he began to seek the God of his father David. And in the 12th year, he began to purge Judah and Jerusalem of the high places, etc. In making that choice, he turned against his biological father, Ammon. Ammon was a wicked man and an idolater. He even went against the practices of his grandfather, though his grandfather repented, Manasseh. But he chose the right way. And young men and young women who know something about God, regardless of how wicked their parents are, you know, they can't just say, well, I can't help it. You know, you get the judgment, you turn wicked, live the wicked life, oh, that's my daddy's fault. Did you see how ungodly he was? What a hypocrite he was? That's his fault. No, no, that won't work. Look at Josiah. Look at his daddy. Look at his granddaddy. You have a choice. And God will hold you accountable for that choice. Above obeying mother and father is your responsibility to obey the God of heaven. In Matthew 22, when Jesus was asked, what's the greatest commandment? You know what he said. Love your father. I mean, love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your mind, and your strength. That's the first commandment. That's the greatest commandment. And the Apostle Paul said in 1 Corinthians 10:31, in application of that, do all to the glory of God. Every decision I make, every choice I make, whether it's in relation to my family, my neighbor, my own children, whatever it's to be, to the glory of my gracious Creator, my God. I have that relationship above all others, and the duties to Him supersede all others.